What is going on, everybody? Glad to be with you as always. This is the On Fire Podcast, brought to you by NBC7 in San Diego. I am Darnay Tripp, coming to you from a guest room closet in South Park, joined as always by Derek Togason. Where are you, Derek?
I'm in my daughter's room that has been turned into an office when she's not here. So we're just kind of hanging out, playing Animal Crossing and doing work. Not necessarily in that order, but maybe in that order. Why are you in a closet?
So as we've discussed in the past, past episodes, we moved has it been about a month? I guess May 4th. So it's been about 3 or 4 weeks. And as one does when they move, there's some work going on outside the house and they're got big machines moving large amounts of dirt and concrete outside and pretty much everywhere in the house. You might even hear kind of the faint but steady hum and the reverse beeps of the machines and all that constantly going. And so this was the quietest place I could find in the house. I even have a blanket kind of stuffed under the door just to mute it as much as possible.
Help the acoustics a little bit. Yeah, that is resourceful of you, my friend. Well done.
So it sounds a little bit hollow, so we apologize. The audio quality certainly isn't what it was when we were in the NBC7 podcast studio, but like everybody these days, we are making do and making the best of the situation.
That we are. So now I'm sure you have all that going on there. It'd be a good time to have some OGs brought in, wouldn't it?
It would be a great time. And that's one thing I noticed is when you're in the middle of the move and you're doing stuff all day and things have slowed down the last couple of weeks, which is good.
You don't want to cook ever. No.
The last thing you feel like doing is cooking. And we actually went to OG's, got food to go, a couple salads, and it was great. OG's not open. Actually, we should ask for an update because things have changed in the last week.
This is very true.
We're going to need to get in touch with our folks at OG's just to make sure, but last we've heard they were only doing pickup and delivery. So gonna need to get an update on that, but definitely support OG's. And once they are open, we talk about the TVs, a great beer list on top of the food. Definitely check out OG's. And I'm guessing even though we've been there before in the afternoon when there's not games and that sort of thing, the TVs are still full. The TVs are packed. All the channels are on. So it's a fun place to hang out, have a meal, and watch whatever's going on, even if there aren't necessarily games.
Okay, well, but we do want to get games. And we want to get games as quickly as we possibly can get games. And now if we have a little bit of, we can't really call it, new news, because you know, can't really do that on a weekly podcast. But MLBPA and the MLB owners, they're talking. Scott Boras is talking. Trevor Bauer is telling Scott Boras to stop talking. We have a labor dispute going on, but we're still looking at. If they're talking about June 4th, Darnay, when we tape this podcast here on the middle of the week, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we have 6 days before June 4th, and that would be when they're supposed to start getting guys. If that was with the date to start reporting, or if it is as Joe Musgrove told us last week, it is June 10th, yeah. You're looking at 12 days. They have 12 days to get all this hashed out, get everybody into camp, get everybody where they're supposed to be going, figure out where the camps are going to be. How does one pull off something like this in that short amount of time? And how badly do we want them to figure it out?
That's a very good question. I think there's a lot of people that do hope they figured out badly. You know, I think, you know, when we first were discussing this, you know, a month or so ago, you know, all of this is contingent on health and safety protocols. And because things have begun to open up in so many more places, that's given us hope that wouldn't necessarily be an obstacle in getting games on the field. We're seeing other sports. You know, golf is supposed to start June 11th. We've seen NASCAR and NASCAR. I mean, talk about social distancing. That's probably the top of the list in terms of sports that are conducive to social distancing. But the NBA, I mean, they've got facilities opening up. The NHL, they seem as far along as anybody. And so there are these encouraging signs that the health and safety side won't be too huge of an obstacle. You're certainly going to have to make plans and kind of put the right processes in place. But now it's gotten to a point where, hey, it looks like we can get these guys in the same building, facility, on the field, and still meet those specific county regulations depending on the location. The problem is the biggest obstacle right now, which is dollar signs, we're 2 weeks into this, 2 weeks into negotiations of some sort, and it seems we're no closer. You know,
when Max Scherzer comes out and says there's no need to talk about any more of a pay cut,
right?
Max Scherzer is a man who has, when he doesn't talk a whole heck of a lot, when he comes out, multiple times Cy Young Award winner, potentially, I mean, he's a guy who is going to be in the conversation for a legitimate Hall of Fame spot.
Sure.
He's a guy who comes out and says something, very smart guy. Now everybody goes, oh, wait a minute. Scherzer said something. Scherzer never says anything unless directly asked. So if he comes out and says there's no need, and which is what he recently said, there's no need to, and I'm paraphrasing, to have any more negotiations if we're going to be talking about any further pay cut. Of course, referring to the deal they had in March, which is they take a prorated salary based on the number of games they play, which again, as we've discussed on this podcast, seems fair. But the owners want them to take total revenue, which is going to be even more. And they came out with this half-baked plan earlier this week where it was, oh, no, we want to make sure that the guys who are making the most money give up the most. It's almost like the tax bracket in America. Right. You make more, you get taxed more. So now they want guys who, I think the number I saw was, who would be making $18 million this year would actually take only $8 million this year.
And the guy I always think about is Manny Machado, because he's the big dollar guy, and his $30 million would turn into somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 million or so, and that's factoring in playoff revenue on top.
When you should have gotten about 15.5, right? Based on the 82 game schedule, if that even is the number of games that they play.
The thing that I thought was interesting, and Bob Nightingale, USA Today, had, I don't know if you saw the graphic, breaking down just different salary levels up to like $35 million and down to your, I think base salary is like around $500. And this is what I didn't realize. 75% of the league is at or below $3 million. And so we always think about the Mike Trouts. We think about the Bryce Harpers and the Manny Machados, these guys with these mega deals. And sure, they're a factor, but by and large, the heavy majority of big leaguers are making $3 million or less. And that's certainly nothing to sneeze at. But we're also, we can't act like all these guys are at the level of a Machado where they're making these ridiculous dollar amounts.
Correct. We can't. And it's one of those things where you talk about average salary. The average salary of Major League Baseball players is this. Well, when you have, you know, 5.5 or 5.5, 5.50 is your base salary, then you have guys who are stretching the curve. You know, your Mike Trouts, your Manny Machados, your Bryce Harpers, all the guys that you mentioned with the Garrett Coles of the world with these massive contracts, those are the ones that skew it to a higher level. What we're not seeing anymore, and it's very interesting, is those mid-level deals, like the five-year, $55, $60 million deals. Those have almost completely gone away over the last couple of years, which I find very interesting. It's either these mega deals or the shorter-term deals where it's 2 years at $25 million. We're not seeing those kind of mid-range deals that kind of put guys more in a baseline of a $5 to $8 million a year type salary schedule, because so many of these teams are finding guys who are bringing them up through the systems, the Fernando Tatis Juniors of the world, and they get so good so fast, they don't have to pay them. They can use them, get them on their rookie salary scale, get them up into arbitration. They can control these guys who are every bit as good, if not better, and faster, and pay out less, and then they have to, you know, pay the piper toward the end of that. But you're not seeing those, like we were talking about this when Adam Jones was still going unsigned. Like, where's the 4 year, you know, $45 to $50 million contract? Mm-hmm. Nobody's getting those things anymore. And so it's almost like baseball's middle class has gone away. So now you have the richest of the rich, your super, super, superstars, and a lot of guys are on the lower end of that. Now, granted, if you're still going to make playing 82 baseball games and making $265,000, I don't think anybody's going to be crying about how much money you're making.
Yeah, and that was what Joe Musgrove said when we spoke to him last week. And if you haven't heard that conversation, it was great to get his perspective on a lot of different topics, and certainly the discussion that's being had right now. You know, his concern is with the guys that have those shorter windows to play, that aren't, you know, your 10-year contract types, the guys that are literally fighting for their career year in and year out and trying to maximize their earning potential during that limited window. And so that, you know, I think, again, it's easy for us on the outside just to think about the guys that make tens of millions, but that's not the reality for most of these guys. The thing that's interesting is, you know, now the players kind of have their rebuttal and they obviously want to maintain their prorated salary, but now they're pushing for more games on top of that. Which seems like that's, I don't want to say they're leaning even further into their demands. You know, they're not necessarily getting closer to what the ownership is looking for, because if they play 100 games, then they would need to be paid that prorated salary for 100 games instead of 82 games. I think it was Ken Rosenthal had an interesting point. Maybe you could negotiate, okay, prorated for 82, but we're playing 100. I don't know. But it's one of the options floated out there. The players get a little bit of what they want, but, you know, then the owners are not going to pay them. They're essentially paying 18 games for free at that point.
Right, and actually a lot of these games, according to the owners, are going to be for free because fans are not going to be in the stands for at least the foreseeable future, perhaps for the entirety of the season. We don't know when we're going to be able to get in there and watch baseball, and if we do, at what capacity are we going to be able to watch? Will it be, you know, 20%? Will it be, you know, when are we going to be able to, you know, World Team Tennis just announced with the loss, you know, the San Diego Aviators, they're going to be playing in one spot and allowing 20% capacity. Well, is that something that we can work on? Is that something that we can say, okay, if we're still kind of in this trending down, if the numbers still look good, are we then going to allow, you know, at Petco Park, 5,000 to 8,000 people to go in and see games? And if you do that, then who gets to go in? Is it season ticket holders? Is it people on a case-by-case basis? Can you go in and just walk up to the ticket booth and buy them? There are a lot of other things that still need to be figured out there. And I think that's a good segue into this week's conversation with Eric Grubner, the Padres president of business operations.
Yeah, you had a chance to talk with them. And you know, all teams are having to kind of get creative, make some concessions, figure out different ways to keep fans engaged, monetize as best they can. It's an interesting time. I don't know if you saw, before I'll let you introduce Eric, did you see the tweet from with Ken Glazer? I might be...
No, I've been putting myself on Twitter quarantine as well. I like being happy with my life.
Kyle Glazer, I know I can. Kyle Glazer of Baseball America. Apologies, Kyle. But the pod, you saw their agreement to pay their minor leaguers through August, $400 a week. And there aren't many teams that have agreed to do that. On top of that, they won't be doing any furloughs of their baseball staff through, I believe, October. And he mentioned that AJ Preller apparently was a big advocate for this and deserves a lot of credit for making sure the minor leaguers are getting paid and making sure the baseball staff continues to get paid. And that will be the case through the summer and for the minor leaguers through August. And, you know, I think a lot of people say $400 for a week, that's not exactly living wages depending on where you live. But the fact that there aren't many teams that have even agreed to that, I think shows you something, shows you what type of investment it is, because others like the A's aren't making that type of investment and they're being criticized. But, you know, hats off to the Padres for making that investment and making it a priority to take care of those folks.
No question. Absolutely no question. And this goes to show, again, just what kind of ownership we're working with here. I know people still think of the Padres and think of terrible ownership because of the, you know, the Jeff Morads of the world and how John Morris didn't put a whole lot of money in. And it's always kind of been just a series of unfortunate events. But when this ownership group took over, Darnay, they have pumped so much money into this with the Seidler family and with the Fowler family. They have truly shown people how a good business is run, and a good business is run when it takes care of their people. And they take care of their people extremely well. And doing that, again, that not only helps all of these minor league guys, it helps their families. And it creates a sense of loyalty as well, because some of these guys come up and they become, you know, superstars. well, they're going to remember a lot of them. Well, and it's not a case, you know, it's a case by case basis. It's not a blanket statement, but they're going to remember what that organization did for them back then. And they're going to be more willing and more apt to say, you know what? You did me a solid back then. So when Mackenzie Gore becomes a superstar that we all know Mackenzie Gore is going to be, maybe he takes a little bit of a discount and stays with the Padres longer term because he did get that. Luis Patino, same thing. He did get that little extra help when they needed it, when they were, you know, down there in the minor leagues and not able to play and not able to make a living. And there's no obligation for the team to do that. We kind of touched on that a little bit with Eric Grubner, again, Padres president of business operations. We also talked about season ticket holders and people who have tickets in general. What are they having to do in order to think about, you know, refunds and how to get people in the stands and how they're handling things and just what a logistical nightmare that part of it is that we really haven't thought or talked about yet. So I know a lot of, you know, Padres season ticket holders, Padres ticket holders in general have questions about this. So that's among the topics I talked to Eric about, along with a very recent development where they signed on a agreement with Ballast Points to give $1 for every case of Swingin' Friar Ale that is sold. $1 of that from the Padres and from Ballast Point is going to Feeding San Diego. And then he had a little breaking news for us. I guess we can have breaking news on a podcast like where he tells us about a couple other things where Petco Park is going to be back in business for a very different way. And actually we'll be able to go there and enjoy some entertainment in the very near future. Here's a conversation with Padres president of business operations, Eric Grubner. Eric, thanks for taking the time to do this. I appreciate it. Feeding San Diego and the San Diego Padres. You guys, I knew about the one thing you're doing with Ballast Point. Can you kind of walk me through the agreement that you have with them in order to donate money to Feeding San Diego? And then we'll talk about what you just told me. You guys are going to be doubling down on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had a longstanding partnership with Ballast Point, a great local craft brewer. And in commemoration of our 50th anniversary season last year, we partnered with Ballast Point to brew a special beer called Swingin' Friar Ale. And it's been really well received by our fan base. And now it's the second year of Swingin' Friar Ale. And we started to talk to Ballast Point about how we could make an impact during this challenging time. And Ballast Point had suggested that we partner together to help support food insecurity here in San Diego and groups like Feeding San Diego that are trying to combat, you know, hunger that unfortunately has become an increasing issue during this time that folks are out of work and, you know, families are going hungry. So we're going to donate from our Padres Foundation $1 for each case of Swingin' Friar Ale that's been sold from the beginning of March when the quarantine began through the end of next month, through the end of June. And Ballast Point is also donating $1. So $2 for every case is going to go to Feeding San Diego. And it's a really well-run organization that we've worked with for a number of years. And along with the San Diego Food Bank, they're making a big difference during this time.
And Feeding San Diego is the only Feeding America affiliate really in the entire, you know, Southern California region here. So great reputation they have. They do a fantastic work. I know other local sports entities have worked with them as well. Now, is that for every case that is sold for a individual taken home or any of them that are bought by, you know, corporations and then sold, you know, individually by them to the people? Is it total product moved?
Yeah, so basically any case that's been sold during that period of time, you know, we'll have the $2 that'll go to Feeding San Diego.
That's awesome. And then what is behind you on the virtual screen, people watching the listening to the podcast, you are not going to see this, but it says drive-in, and then you have a concert, June 7th, Petco Park. How are you guys going to swing this? It looks like an old 1950s kind of deal.
Yeah, we're really excited. So everything's been turned upside down by the coronavirus pandemic. And one of the things that we began discussing with our county public health officials several weeks ago was the idea of drive-in. And, you know, it's a would seem to be a safe way. It's being done elsewhere right now for people to kind of shelter in place in their car, for lack of a better, you know, way of describing it, and a safe and appropriate way to still bring people together in some form of a community and get them down, at least in the vicinity of the ballpark, to have some fun and also celebrate some meaningful moments. So there's several things actually that we're going to be doing in our parking lots over the coming weeks. The first of which is actually we're going to have three local high schools that are going to hold their drive-in graduations in the Lexus lot. So we have a stage with three video boards. There'll be a valedictorian speaker, other speakers for the school. And I think will be a really neat way for those graduates to be able to celebrate and commemorate the really meaningful moment of graduating from high school and moving on, many of them to college or other things that they're going to be doing. And so we actually worked with Trevor Hoffman earlier today, and he has a special, I guess it won't be such a surprise message now that I'm talking about it, but he actually has a greeting for those graduates that we're going to play during those ceremonies that are going to be held at the Lexus lot. And then we're going to have a concert on June 7th, details to follow, a Switchfoot, great local San Diego band, Grammy award-winning band, and Noah Cyrus. I've been told by my kids, the younger sister of Miley Cyrus, is going to be performing. And all the proceeds from that concert, 91X and local promoters are launching the show. All the proceeds are going to go to benefit Feeding San Diego, which is a cause that I know the guys in Switchfoot well, and they've been supporting Feeding San Diego as well. And then we're going to follow that up with another surprise that's going to be coming soon. The hint is drive-in movies and Will Ferrell. So you're going to have to stick around and wait for that one to come out in the coming days.
My mind immediately goes one place, but I think that might be a little bit too obvious. how did you come up with the idea? I mean, Switchfoot, obviously, you know, great, as you say, great local band. They are big San Diego supporters. You guys have a relationship with them. When you kind of broached this topic with them, what was the reaction, response? Are people starting to get maybe a little bit more apt to go out and do things in public nowadays?
Yeah, definitely. So John and a number of the guys in the band are good friends of mine, known each other and been family friends with them for years. And so John actually reached out to me around the time that this whole thing started with quarantine. And he was looking to see if we had any Padres players that wanted to get involved with a challenge that he started along with a few others to benefit Feeding San Diego. It was all social media based. And at the time I mentioned to him, hey, it'd be great if at some point, you know, we could have you guys play a benefit show here in San Diego at the ballpark. And so it really came together through 91X and some other great local partners that they wanted to promote this show. And really at the end of the day, one of the things that I've always appreciated about the guys in the band is that they really match up very well with the Padres from the perspective of really being focused on giving back to the San Diego community. And they've had a number of charities over the years that they've really actively supported here in San Diego, being a band that grew up and is from San Diego. They distinctively identify themselves as being a San Diego band. And obviously the Padres are as San Diego as it gets. So whenever we get an opportunity to work with local musicians or local causes to amplify what we're doing in the community, especially in the area of supporting, you know, food banks, it's a win for everybody, and also some great music. And I know John mentioned he's excited that they're gonna be able to dust off their guitars and play a little bit, which is something they haven't been able to do publicly for a while.
Now, on the business operations side, how difficult has this time been for you? You're supposed to have a product you're able to, you know, sell, and in the baseball team being on the field, and you don't have it. You don't really know when it's going to be coming back. Getting creative with things like this obviously is something where kind of your mind goes to fill the time. But what's this time been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been challenging. It's been very difficult at times. You know, we've had to make some very difficult decisions as an organization just to really stay on a level footing throughout this time where we haven't been able to play baseball. It's been very weird at times just to be at the ballpark this time of the year and not have baseball being played. I think that, you know, the irony is that at a time that our country and our San Diego region needs the diversion and the entertainment that live sports and entertainment provides, you know, we haven't been able to offer that. And I know that's been wearing on our players. It's been wearing on those of us in the front office, because we see an opportunity when it's safe and appropriate to, you know, to bring some measure of healing and hope through the business that we're in and playing sports and offering that diversion. And so this is much bigger than sports. It always has been. It's a matter of life and death for people. And we've been very supportive of all the efforts of our local public health authorities and also our frontline workers that are really supporting and on the front lines with everything that's going on right now. But at the end of the day, when it is safe and we're able to play again, I think it's going to be a sweet moment to have baseball again, even if initially it's without fans at Petco Park, just to show that we're getting back on our feet again and we're getting back to some points of normalcy that people can fix themselves to as everything around us has been, so challenging and so difficult. And we're long-term members of this community. We're not going anywhere. And so, we consider it a privilege and an honor to do everything we can right now to help support people that are struggling in our community. And beyond what we've done with frontline workers and food insecurity, we think bringing baseball back will be a great next step that we can offer to this community. So we're excited for that when it happens.
You mentioned possibly playing games without people in the stands. I know I've had several season ticket holders ask me, what do we do? What's going on? I know as a season ticket holder myself, I've gotten really consistent communication from the folks in the ticket office, and that's much appreciated. How often are you changing, having to change plans? Because we might get fans in July, we might get half capacity, 20% in July. So how are you, moving through that when you have so many people who you have to, who have questions you need to answer?
Yeah, it's really our approach, Derek. And by the way, thanks for being a season ticket holder. We really appreciate it.
My wife, actually, the first time, that was my birthday present last year. So that's why she's the best wife ever.
It sounds like a great wife. So that's outstanding. We appreciate it. But, I think one of the reasons why we waited maybe a little bit longer than some people would have liked to announce a refund and exchange policy is we've just been trying to get our arms around what the 2020 season is going to look like. And, we didn't want to go out and, every week or every 2 weeks, make an announcement on a further cancellation of games. We really wanted to do it at one time and make it meaningful for people. So, we really picked, that end of May timeline at the point that we announced our refund and exchange policy. And we're hoping that our season ticket members take advantage of the credit and the benefits that we're offering if they do, roll money over to 2021 in the event they're not able to come to a game in 2020. But we also understand that people are hurting economically right now and they need refunds. And we just didn't feel it was appropriate for us to continue to hold on to people's money if they needed it. And so we've given everybody the option to, take the refund through the end of May. And as we get greater clarity within the next several weeks on what the 2020 season is going to look like, we'll obviously be equally as responsive to make sure that people can get refunds when they want them. And but we're hoping that people stick with us. And I think we put together a nice package that I assume you've received an email on of kind of benefits that we're offering for those fans as a loyalty credit if they want to stick with us into 2021 formally. And that's great. And if not, we understand. And either way, we hope to see everybody back in the ballpark as soon as possible.
And going back to events like this, Petco Park is an absolute jewel of a facility. It's, since 2016, it's been rated top 1, 2, 3 ballpark in baseball. But it goes beyond being a baseball stadium, I think. When you're able to do things like this, like even if it's at the parking lot, the Lexus lot across, just right across the way there off Park and Trevor Hoffman Avenue, are you – just be able to use a facility like that and utilize the gem that it is right there and how recognizable it is for people. Do you think just being there, being back, even if it's on the outside, doing something that's an event at and around Petco Park will kind of help the process of maybe feeling some semblance of normalcy for this community?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think that, Petco Park, as you mentioned, is a real jewel among all ballparks in America. And, we're really proud of Petco Park. We have an ownership group that, since they've owned the team, has committed over $60 million to improving and maintaining Petco Park. And so having the kind of ballpark that we have doesn't come without, great ownership commitment. And frankly, going back to 1998, when Prop C was passed by the voters of San Diego, great public support. It's the city's ballpark, and we've always viewed it as such. It's a great example of a public-private partnership and what can be done, but it's also an obligation that we take very seriously to maintain and improve and keep Petco Park in a first-class manner. So, we think it's an important venue for San Diego. In 98, the campaign was more than a ballpark, and I think we're proud to say that it's become that. The most important thing that we do at Petco Park is play baseball. And our plan is to play winning baseball there. And we've been working really hard to get to that point and then hopefully take it beyond winning baseball to playoff and championship level baseball. But year in and year out, there's a lot of other things that we do at the ballpark that really do, I think, benefit the community, both because people can come participate and attend concerts or other events, And also because it generates activity downtown that helps the local businesses and the surrounding community and makes the surrounding community in the Ballpark District and East Village and Gaslamp and Little Italy, you know, really vibrant. And so it's a great place. I'm excited to see how the city's going to continue to grow up in the coming decades around Petco Park. But, you know, I think if we continue to maintain the ballpark well, which we intend to do, it has really good bones architecturally. I think it can be, as I've said many times publicly, it can be a 100-plus-year-old ballpark. It can be eventually a Wrigley Field, a Fenway Park, you know, one of those iconic sports venues that, you know, really becomes the character of a city.
And then one non-baseball related question. Through quarantine, we've all picked up some kind of a skill or learned to do something else. What is your extra skill that you have learned during this time?
Oh, boy. Well, I don't know that I've become more skilled, but I have I've filled the time playing the guitar with my daughter, who's big into music. And so I'm her backing band. Like, you know, I can hammer out a few relatively simple chords and let her shine on the lead guitar. But that's been really fun. I mean, in all seriousness, it's been great just to, you know, you got to find the silver linings in whatever cloud you find yourself in from time to time. And the opportunity to have a little bit more time this time of the year with my family has been really special. And playing the guitar with my daughter, being with my wife, my other daughter, and my son has been great. And, getting ready to get out of this thing and get back to playing baseball. But until then, just, you know, hugging everybody around us, I know, a little bit tighter. So,
what is your go-to tune?
So my daughter and I like to play a little Pink Floyd. So Wish You Were Here. Yeah. So like I said, she's her guitar playing skills have I initially taught her, but the student has far eclipsed the teacher. So like I said, I'm there just backing her up a little bit. But yeah, we like to play Pink Floyd. She's also done some mashups of some 90s hits that she knows my wife and I enjoy. So it's good stuff.
And that's the way it should be. Our kids, we get given the best chance to get better than we do. And then when they do, we both love them and hate them for it.
That's right. That's right.
Awesome. Eric, thanks for the time, and I appreciate it. Congrats on all the stuff you guys are doing. And yeah, I'm intrigued about that Will Ferrell thing. So okay. Make sure you don't keep us in the dark for too long. All right.
Yeah, we won't. Thanks, Derek.
All right, Eric, thanks for the conversation. I'll tell you what, Darnay, I have tried. I've taken guitar lessons. I've tried to figure it out. I tried piano lessons. I can't. My brain with the ADHD, for some reason, it just, like, I can't do music. Love music. I can write lyrics all day. Can't sing a lick. When it comes trying to play an instrument, man, that is just beyond me. And I respect and hate people who can do it extremely well.
And see, if you had told me that you were proficient at like 12 different instruments, I actually wouldn't be surprised. I would believe you. If you were like, yeah, I got cello and oboe and drums and harpsichord on lock, I'd be like, yeah, I could see that.
No, but you know what's really interesting though, is this is one of those things about ADHD. I can't play a single instrument at all. Adam Levine from Maroon 5 also has about the same level of it that I do. He plays like 25 different instruments and plays them wonderfully. So it's all over the board with this mental illness thing.
Yeah, I always joke with my parents that they were trying to create a, what was the family of musicians? The name's
Partridge.
Yes, exactly. Partridge Family.
I was totally joking. Are you serious? Really? Some Partridge Family?
No, not the Partridge Family. Who is it?
The Cyruses?
No, there's... whatever.
The Jackson Five.
No, it'll come to me. I can't remember.
What era are we talking about?
My sister, this is old. This is probably like 60s, 70s.
The Carpenters.
No. Family?
Family of musicians. They're all in a band together?
Yeah. This is great podcast content, by the way, of me Googling. The Osmonds. I think the Osmonds.
Oh, yeah. Donnie and Marie.
Okay. My sister could sing. Brother could play guitar. Other brother could play drums. My sister could play the keyboard as well. They didn't have a bass player. And so they made me get bass lessons when I was in middle school. I'm like, you guys are just trying to complete the band. I don't want to play the bass. I want to play the drums, but you guys need a bass player. And so you're making me play the bass. So I did that for a few years. My fingers hurt. My big regret, though, is I got piano lessons when I was a kid, and I was the biggest brat about it. And right now, as an adult, is there anything cooler than seeing somebody sit down in a room with a piano and just play something that sounds lovely for a group of people? I always think that's awesome, and I wish I had that gift.
A buddy of mine told me a story one time. He used to work in Chicago, and he was at a hotel bar in Chicago. It was actually later on, it was the same hotel that Chris Farley passed away in. Not to make any kind of totally dark comparison here. But you see, they're sitting down there just having a couple of drinks with friends. All of a sudden, he hears somebody just tickling the ivories and going, "Man, that guy's pretty good." Looks over, Billy Joel. Billy Joel just walked over and sat down in the hotel bar and started playing. And he's going, "Okay. Yeah, so to have that ability to just kind of command a room by just sitting down and be able to playing something, that would be so cool.
It'd be nice. I remember one time I was in college, and I used to go to just empty, they had the kind of the conference halls and that sort of thing. Sometimes a library, but sometimes I just like to find a big open space that's quiet. One time I was doing that, I was probably studying for finals, and somebody sits down at the piano. I'm like, I just want peace and quiet. And they ended up just playing something beautiful. And it was like really nice, relaxing music to enjoy while you're cramming for finals. So the power of music is something that neither one of us harnesses on this podcast.
No, but we can talk about music, which is indeed great. All right. So that's, we got music, and we got season tickets, and we got Padres update. I think we touched on pretty much everything we can touch on right about now.
Did you hear what, I forget where they are, the Blue Wahoos, and then I remember the Salem Kaiser Volcanoes, because they were in the Northwest League.
The Blue Wahoos, yeah, they're in Pensacola, Florida. They are in the Florida, I believe, Florida State League, I want to say.
Okay.
Or are they AA in the Southern League? I forget.
So when I was in Spokane covering the Indians, which is the Rangers short season single A, they played against Salem Kaiser. Apparently it started with the Blue Wahoos, and Salem Kaiser's doing it, putting their ballpark on Airbnb.
It's a brilliant thing. Isn't it? I did. It's awesome. It's so awesome. You can rent out on Airbnb the entire ballpark.
And you can stay there like overnight too. It's not just like an experience, right?
You can actually stay. It's like a hotel. You can rent it out for the night. You can use the batting cages. You can sleep on the field. You can go in the clubhouse. They have like the whole nine. It's a fantastic idea. And I'm actually really upset that we don't own a minor league ballpark that we can actually do. So, we should call Blake Elson or Storm. That might be a little spacious. Plus, the guys are still working out there anyway, so you might get in the way of them. We should call Blake Elson or Storm and see if they can do that for us at the Diamond.
That would be a great idea.
In fact, I'm gonna text them right now. See if hey Sean, what do you say, buddy? Can we hook us up with a little Airbnb action at the Diamond there at Elsinore?
Make sure there's a few bats, buckets of balls, have the batting cage set up.
Oh, yeah, and I'll throw BP all night.
Can we get Mackenzie Gore or Luis Patino instead?
I don't think we want to face Mackenzie Gore or Luis Patino. that might be a little out of our pay grade. You can hit me, no problem. I throw the ball very straight and very down the middle, which is why I'm great for batting practice.
That's what I like.
Those guys have a lot of movements and off-speed pitches and other things that good pitchers have. I was a first baseman, man. I can hit. I'm not a guy who's going to go out there and light up the radar gun.
I was the opposite. 2 years of Little League, I think I had one career hit. I took it very seriously growing up in a National League town in Philadelphia that pitchers don't hit. So I was a pitcher, and I didn't hit. That was my role.
That's what you do, man. Although Steve Carlton was a pretty good hitter. Roy Halladay was a decent hitter.
It's true.
Curt Schilling, nah, not really.
No, Schilling, not so much.
What are the other great Phillies starting pitchers?
I feel like Cliff Lee was decent.
Cliff Lee was a decent hitter, actually, yeah.
Mike Hampton a lot.
Oh, yeah, Mike Hampton, that dude could hit. You know what's crazy? I was thinking about this. So we talk about nowadays Madison Bumgarner. Oh, yeah. The dude hits bombs. He's a great hitting pitcher. He has a career like 175 or something like that average, and he's a great hitting pitcher. And this is where we can launch into I'm loving the universal DH idea. Because as fun as it is to see a pitcher go out there and try to do it, I would much rather see, if it comes down to, do I have to watch Chris Paddock or Josh Naylor take at-bats? I want to see Josh Naylor take at-bats.
Well, that means the Padres don't have to see Zach Greinke again either. So works out for him on a number of ways.
This is nice, because Zach Greinke, when it comes to Petco Park, apparently turns into Babe freaking Ruth from the right side.
Yep, pretty much.
All right, I think that's the On Fire podcast for us this week. Thanks again to OGs.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric Grubner for joining us and giving us a lowdown as well. Got a few potential guests in mind that I think would be pretty exciting. So
anything we can talk about, or do we have to wait to leave that tease there?
I don't know if I want to tease it out yet, because some I haven't reached out yet. It's promising. Feel pretty good about it, but want to make sure we lock them down. But keep with us. We're with you every week. New episodes of On Fryer, and it's been great chatting from so many different people from the baseball world. And I mean, next week's episode, you know, if we don't have something a bit more firm, it might be time to be a little bit concerned. I mean, at least if there's not movement, there's got to be movement at a certain point. And like you said, we're getting into June next week. So it's gotta start.
And I'm thinking when we do get an actual announcement and we do have a date, that might be grounds for an emergency On Fryer podcast.
I think it would be the third emergency podcast of all time in On Fryer history.
Yeah, but this one will be a good one because it'll be, you know, it won't be manager got fired. You know, Caesar's never going again.
Tingler, you know, like the Tingler one?
No, Tingler one was pretty good, actually. Yeah, that was solid. So that was, yeah, so we'll go 50-50 on the positive versus negative On Fryer podcasts.
Good to swing things in the positive direction. And I think a lot of people would agree with that if there were actual baseball games this summer. So, yes, fingers crossed, emergency podcast sooner rather than later, and we will be with you again next week. Thanks, Derek. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thanks, y'all.